The following is a recording for Credit Corp on Thursday, February 7th, 2019 at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Good morning, everyone. I would like to welcome all of you to Credit Corp LTD Fourth Quarter 2018 Conference Call. We now have our speakers in conference. Please be aware each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given to the procedure to follow if you'd like to ask a question. With us today is Mr. Walter Bailey, Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Alvaro Correa, Deputy Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Gianfranco Ferrari, Deputy Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Cesario, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Rinaldo Llosa, Chief Risk Officer, Ms. Francesca Raffo, Head of Transformation at BCP. Now it is my pleasure to turn the conference over to Credit Corp's Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Cesar Rios. Mr. Rios, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to Credit Corp's conference call on our earnings results for the fourth quarter of 2018. Before we review Credit Corp's performance in the fourth quarter of 2018, I would like to highlight some important matters that characterize the scenario in which we have operated in the last few months. As tailwinds for our businesses. First, we expected real GDP growth in the last quarter of 2018 to stand close to 5% year over year. With this result, the economy will have grown around 4% in 2018, one of the best results in the region. The fishing sector, public investment, and private mining investment were the main drivers of growth in 2018. Second, there were important investment announcements in 2018. One of the most notable was the Quellaveco mining project in Moquegua for $5 billion. Third, the average price of copper stood at $2.96 per pound in 2018, which represented a four-year peak. The price ended at $2.7 per pound. A headwind for our businesses. First, global economy activity decelerated in the last quarter of 2018. Second, through 2018, we observed an escalation of trade tensions between the U.S. and China. This has implied risk for global economic growth. Third, in 2018, we observed several episodes of financial volatility that impacted our trading-related activities. On the local front, Peru registered a slight decrease in copper output during the second half of 2018. Lastly, the Lavajato scandal has had negative effects on economic activity through a paralysis of certain investment projects and political uncertainty. With regard to the political environment, the referendum held on December 9th has no material impact on the business environment. Finally, the most important political event in 2018 was in March 2018 when President Vizcarra took office. Please, let's move to the next page. Here, I would like to discuss the evolution of the local economy in the fourth quarter. In chart number one, you can see that GDP growth peaked in the last quarter in the year, as mentioned in the previous slide. In chart number two, you can see that domestic demand is estimated to have recovered in 2018 and reached a five-year peak. In chart number three, you can see that local and international interest rates, which affect our funding costs and businesses, decreased in the last quarter of the year. In parallel, the Peruvian Central Bank reference rate has remained stable at 2.75% since March 2018. Finally, in chart number four, the orange line shows that total loans in the Peruvian banking sector expanded 10.2% in 2018, which represents the highest growth rate in 3 years. Consumer loans expanded 12.6% in 2018, which represents a three-year peak. It is important to highlight that quarter-end loan balances at Credit Corp grew 10.3% in 2018. Please, next page. Regarding the full-year performance, there are important aspects of our lines of businesses I would like to mention. In the case of universal banking, BCP improved its pace of loan growth in all segments, after low loan expansion in 2017. The loan mix in the first half of the year put downward pressure on NIM, but towards the end of the year, retail banking accelerated its pace of loan growth, leading to a subsequent recovery in net interest margin. Moreover, for the fifth consecutive year, the cost of risk dropped, leading to a subsequent increase in Credicorp's risk-adjusted net interest margin. However, although income generation improved, the cost-to-income ratio deteriorated due to acceleration in the pace of growth of operating expenses, which was in turn registered, particularly in the last quarter of the year, and changed the decreasing trend of the efficiency ratio observed in previous quarters. We will explain this topic in detail later on. BCP Bolivia reported a good level of loan growth and a reduction in provisions. However, the funding costs and operating expenses increased, and accordingly, profitability fell. With regard to microfinance, Mibanco posted a good level of loan growth, although loan origination slowed down in the third quarter. The cost of risk was relatively stable in comparison to 2017 level, even though it deteriorated in the second and third quarter. Mibanco improved its cost of risk during the last quarter. Moreover, Mibanco has improved its funding structure by increasing retail deposit share of total funding. After significantly improving its operation efficiency in 2017 and 2018, Mibanco has started building capabilities to sustain business growth, which translated in an acceleration of the pace of growth of its operating expenses. Mibanco has started increasing its number of loan officers and building new channels, leveraging its digital capabilities. Regarding the challenges this subsidiary has faced, it is important to mention that the downward pressure in margins due to competition. With regard to the insurance and pension funds, the insurance business posted an increase in its contribution to credit to an improvement in the posted by the life insurance business and to the good results of health business from the association with Banmedica. All the aforementioned offset the deterioration in the underwriting results of the P&C business, as the increase in net claims and acquisition costs was higher than the increase in net earning premiums. The pension fund business also improved its performance after recovering the profitability of its funds under management and those of its legal reserves. However, the tender for new affiliates that was held on December 2018 was not awarded to Prima. In the investment banking and wealth management, in 2018, wealth management income grew in Peru and Chile, offsetting a decrease in income in Colombia. Additionally, total expenses remained stable, although the cost-to-income ratio deteriorated due to a decrease in total income. In the last quarter of 2018, Credicorp Capital Chile posted an impairment in goodwill for 38 million soles, which was mainly due to the adjustment of the discount rate. Finally, the mark-to-market of proprietary investments deteriorated mainly due to the increase in interest rates. Next slide, please. In this chart, you can see the most important figures of Credicorp's performance in the fourth quarter. Credicorp reported net income of 957 million soles, which was 5.4% below the third quarter results of the previous year, of the previous quarter, and 10% below those registered in the fourth quarter of 2017. The results represent a return on average equity and average assets of 16.3% and 2.2% respectively. The quarter-over-quarter evolution reflects the effect of a significant increase in operating expenses, which offset the favorable evolution posted by the net income, core items of non-financial income, and provision for loan losses. The year-over-year drop in net income is attributable to three factors: an acceleration in the pace of growth of operating expenses and an impairment of 38 million soles of Credicorp Capital Chile, both reported in 2017, and the sale of Enel shares in the fourth quarter of 2017, which generated income of 163.7 million soles. Finally, It is noteworthy, first, the acceleration in the pace of loan growth and its positive impact in net interest income, which posted the highest quarterly growth rate in 2018, and second, the improvement in cost of risk. Next page, please. In this chart, you can see the full year results. Net income reached a level of 3.9 billion soles, which represented a return on average equity and average assets of 17.5% and 2.3% respectively. These results were 2.6% below those obtained in 2017 due to, first, the gain of 444.47 million soles from the sale of two long-term equity investments, BCI and NL, registered in 2017, and second, but to a lesser extent, the increase in operating expenses and impairment at Credicorp Capital Chile. However, it is important to highlight the significant improvements in core items such as the acceleration in the pace of loan growth, the significant reduction in cost of risk, and thus the recovery of risk-adjusted net interest margins, an expansion of fee income and gains on FX transactions. Finally, on terms of capital ratio of BCP standalone, the BIS, Tier 1, and Core Equity Tier 1 ratios decreased due to a strong growth in risk-weighted assets, in line with loan expansions. It is important to remember that we keep a credit cost level a reserve fund of approximately 1.5 billion soles, which is invested in liquid low-risk assets. This fund has the effect of reducing credit corp's return on average equity by around 100 basis points. Let's review the main figures and indicators in more detail. As you can see in chart number one, first, interest earning assets measured in quarter end balances remain relatively stable quarter over quarter and year over year. Second, there was a change in the composition of interest-earning assets in favor of the most profitable assets, loans, which increased their share in total interest-earning assets. This trend was observed throughout 2018. Third, as shown in chart number two, average daily loan balances expanded 9.2% in 2018. Furthermore, in terms of loan mix by business segment, loan expansion was mainly driven by wholesale banking, followed by retail banking and then Mibanco. It is important to note that loan expansion in retail banking was led by the mortgage loan book. Fourth, in chart number three, you can see that loan growth was fostered in both local and foreign currency. However, the expansion in local currency loans outpaced that of the foreign currency loans. Next page, please. In terms of funding, first, as you can see in chart number one, Credicorp's funding structure shows an increase in deposits shares of total funding, which is more evident in the year-over-year analysis. This was the trend we observed throughout 2018. Second, in chart two, for deposits by type, you can see that the mix in deposits has also favored funding, given the low-cost deposits such as savings and demand deposits increase their share. The 13.8 year-over-year increase in saving deposits is noteworthy and was driven mainly by the initial results posted by saving accounts opened at kiosks, which was the first product launched by BCP's strategic initiative transformation. Third, as shown in chart number three, Credicorp's funding cost has remained relatively stable despite the upward trend in international rates, mainly due to a more favorable funding mix, both by currency and by funding source. Next page, please. Net interest income grew 4.9% quarter over quarter, 8.6% year over year, and 5.2% in 2018, which represents an improvement compared to the results posted in the previous quarter and in 2017. This performance shows, first, the positive effect of loan growth on interest income, where all segments of BCP and Mibanco expanded their portfolios. Second, the moderate increase in interest expenses, which was attributed to a more favorable funding structure than in previous years, as we explained earlier. Next page, please. With regard to risk quality, in chart number one, you can see the quarter-over-quarter evolution of the total cost of risk, which decreased 20 basis points due to, first, the decrease in the provisions required at BCP due to the improvement of the risk quality of the portfolio and the reversal of provisions due to reduction in the exposure to clients related to the Lavallato case. Second, the decrease in the provision required at Mibanco after the adjustments made at the end of the second quarter of 2018 to recover risk quality. The analysis of full-year results are shown in chart number two. The contraction of 40 basis points in the total cost of risk is noteworthy and due mainly to, first, the reduction of BCP's provision requirement due to the improvement in the risk quality of the portfolio, in particular in the consumer and credit card segments, and to the reversal of provisions from Lavallato case clients. And, second, the effect of 2017 of the provision requirements for the El Niño phenomenon and the Lavallato case. It is important to remember that on January 1, 2018, Credicorp adopted the requirements of IFRS 9 for loan provisions, whose first effect was a one-off increase of 320 million loans and off-balance sheet exposures due to methodology changes. Next page, please. As we discussed in previous slides, Credicorp's net interest margin was relatively stable in 2018, reaching a level of 5.26%. Furthermore, for the fourth consecutive year, the cost of risk improved and reached a level of 1.38%, 44 points below the level posted in 2012. As a result, Credicorp's risk-adjusted net interest margin increased 20 basis points and reach a level of 4.31%, the highest in 6 years. These results represent clear evidence of the efforts and resources that we have been rolled out to strengthen our abilities as well as price strategies. After challenging years in terms of risk quality and loan growth, risk-adjusted NIM has reached a healthy level. Next page, please. On this page, we will discuss the evolution of non-financial income. As you can see in chart number one, non-financial income expanded 6% quarter-over-quarter due to good performance for core items, fee income, net gains in foreign exchange transactions, and the net gain from associates, which refers to the health business from association with Banmedica. On a full-year basis, as you can see in chart number two, the core items of non-financial income that we mentioned before also post good performance. However, total non-financial income contracted 5.9% compared to the level in 2017. This was mainly attributable to, first, the income of 444.7 million generated in 2017 from the sale of equity investment BCI and Enel, and second, in a lesser extent, the effect of market volatility throughout the year that resulted in a decrease in the net gain in sales of securities and net gain in derivatives. Next page, please. In the year-over-year analysis of operating efficiency, which eliminates seasonality, and in the full-year analysis, you can see that the cost-to-income ratio deteriorated due to an acceleration in the pace of growth of operating expenses. This was mainly due to an increase in salary and employee benefits, administrative and general expenses, and acquisition costs of the insurance business. In 2018, approximately 50% of the increase in operating expenses was registered in BCP standalone, 30% in Pacifico and 10% in Mibanco. If we start with Mibanco, the expansion in operating expenses was mainly due to the developing of new capabilities to support the growth of our traditional businesses, international expansion, and the creation of digital products. In the case of Pacifico, approximately 60% of its increase was mainly related to the expansion of sales in life insurance businesses, and the remaining 40% was mainly due to a change in the accounting of property and casualty of underwriting fees that previously were booked upfront and from 2018 and on are accrued over the life of the insurance policy. In the case of BCP standalone, a third of the increase is due to the strategic initiative transformation whose budget execution was accelerated at the end of the year. The remaining two-thirds were mainly due to three different drivers. First, expansion of transactional activity. Second, the increase in incentive for productivity and variable compensation, which were mainly explained due to sales volume above target and the outperformance in another KPIs such as customer satisfaction. And third, at BCP standalone, net income surpassed budget, so we provisioned an additional profit sharing for employees. Now, I would like to hand over this call to Francesca Raffo, Head of Transformation at BCP, who will talk about the strategic initiative transformation that we are executing at BCP.
Thank you. I'd like to show a starting slide, a slide with the purpose and BCP's North Star. We have established two North Star goals for 2021, one of them being number one in customer experience in Peru, and the next one having the best efficiency ratio in the region. To describe how those look like in more concrete terms, we have set six key results for 2021, and we have really challenged ourselves significantly to define them, and we know we might not achieve all of them, but the purpose is to inspire and give size to our ambition and to move the organization towards these goals. The key results are a cost-to-income ratio around mid-30s, to duplicate the cross-sale ratio for our customers, to be able to pre-approve 50% of the economically active population, to be number one in employee experience, to serve 70% of our sales digitally, and also a non-disclosed net income goal. The next slide shows the way we approach the transformation. We started some years ago, and we describe it as we are on board of a large spaceship on our way to planet XF, the planet of experience and efficiency. Our program is currently organized in 10 fronts. These we refer to as engines of the transformation, and I will briefly comment on some of them. The first one was digital journey. This is focused on improving our customer experience through digital innovation. We have attacked several projects, one of them being an application for peer-to-peer access payment, and it has grown significantly, reaching 450,000 users. Rapid is a key piece in our digital strategy as we are focused on increasing its use. It helps us to build customer loyalty, reduce the use of cash, increase deposits, and allow us to obtain more customer data to serve them better. We have also built 5 MVPs, digital MVPs, and are beginning to see the results in different parts of the business. Digital risk. We focus on transforming the risk practice within the bank so that we are more prepared for a digital world. At the end of 2018, we have managed to approve credit for 25% of the economically active population and a significant increase from 15% in 2017. Data and analytics. As a challenge to enable a self-driven organization, we have secured the first layer of three of our two data architectures, the data lake, to set pillars for this. We have also team that data scientists start to provide to data analytics. Key highlights to that use that analytics is managed to increase profit in a foreign exchange business. Another engine is the distribution model, and it focuses on redefining distribution models for credit granted was facilitating completed the purchase of home. The next slide, we can see the first result. Number one, the individual customers. The main achievement is as follows. We have looking at the key results. At the end of 2018, 31% of customers are now digital customers, going from 21% 2 years ago. Consumer customer base has grown 30% in the same period. It means that the number of digital customers has grown more than 90% in the last 2 years. In terms of transactions, the percentage of transactions performed through digital channels continues to increase as a percentage of total transactions done at branches and then that one, and at this it continues to increase. In December 2018, 58% were done via digital channels, and that number turned into 59% when we include POS transactions, and only 4% of the transactions were executed at the branches. Our next slide is digital sales. Regarding digital sales in 2018, 6% of our digital sales in usage were served digital, and 33% were served via digital and self-service channels. And if we look at December alone, those numbers are 8.3 and 34.6 respectively. So we're going to start again looking at the key results. Slide number 16. So our main achievement for 2018 is as follows. Looking at our digital results, by the end of 2018, 31% of our customers are digital customers, growing from 21 2 years ago. Considering our customer base has grown 30% in the same period, it means that the number of digital customers has grown more than 90% in the last 2 years. In terms of transactions, the transactions performed as a percentage of digital channels continues to grow, and the percentage done at branches decreases. In December 2018, 48 of our transactions were done via digital channels. That number turns into 59 when we include POS transactions, and only 4% of the transactions are executed through branches. Next slide is digital sales. Regarding digital sales, in 2018, 6% of our sales in units were served digitally, and 33% were served by digital and self-service channels. If we look at December alone, those numbers are 8.3 and 34.6 respectively. We have 6 products being sold via digital channels, and expect our digital sales to continue to increase as the offering continues to grow. In terms of deposits, we introduced the savings account opening on digital channels in December 2019, and in the first month of operations, 2% of all the account openings were done via this channel. An additional 39% of accounts were opened via our self-service kiosk. Regarding our time deposits, 21% of them are now sold digitally. Finally, regarding the loan portfolio, we launched credit card applications via web in December of 2018, and in the first month also, it has contributed 2% of the total credit cards sold. Regarding our payroll advance products, 1/3 of them are served digitally. We continue to work on delivering new products via digital as we are convinced this brings both better experience for our customers and more efficiency. The cost of opening a savings account is 9 times lower than compared to that of physical channels. The next slide, we look at satisfaction. Finally, in terms of customer satisfaction, we remain as the market leader in our private banking and alta affluent small, mid-sized business and middle market corporate banking and institutional segment. And we have achieved to grow from fourth to third place in our customer, in our consumer segment market, which is the biggest market in terms of customer number of customers. Thank you.
Thank you, Francesca. Finally, in slide number 19, I present our guidance 2019 as a reference for what we expect in terms of results. We perceive that the macroeconomic context will be relatively similar to that phase in 2017 and estimate that, first, loan growth should be in the range of 8% and 10%. Second, the cost of risk should remain within the range between 1.3% and 1.5%. Third, net interest margin should post a level between 5.4% and 5.7%, which represent a slight increase. Fourth, risk-adjusted net interest margin should recover slightly. Fifth, the efficiency ratio should remain stable in comparison to the level posted in 2018. Sixth, the return on average equity should be between 17.5% and 18.5%. Finally, it's important to mention that we are in the process in which we significantly build digital and self-service capabilities, and at the same time, we are very prudent preserving the traditional distribution capabilities while we transition from one predominantly model to another. Thank you. Yes, we will end the discussion. With these comments, I would like to end the Q&A, please.
Thank you, sir. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity for questions. We also ask that you please only ask one question at a time. After each question has been addressed by our speakers, you will then be allowed to ask as many follow-ups as needed. But again, please only ask one question at a time. Our first question comes from Gabriel Mobrega with Citi.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to ask questions. I actually have a question on your loan growth guidance. Hello? Are you listening? Okay. So I'll just go on. Yes. It's just very quickly. I just want to understand here why you are expecting a loan growth of around 8 to 10%, which is what you already delivered in 2018, given that the Peruvian economy could improve further during the year. And also here, if you could maybe give us more color on what segments you are expecting to grow more, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
No. Vamos a repetir, pero no lo voy a decir. Dile que estoy colgándolo. Sí, ya.
Yo lo que te he preguntado es...
Please continue with the Q&A. We couldn't hear previously due to the communication issues.
Thank you. Again, it's quick. If you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Our first question is down the line. Gabriel Morega with Citi. Please repeat your question.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to ask questions. I actually have a question regarding your loan growth guidance. I'm going to just pick your brains on what you're expecting and what are you seeing in terms of loan demand, and why do you expect maybe loan growth to remain in the same levels, given that the Peruvian economy could improve further in 2019? And also here, if I could ask maybe some more color on what segments you expect to grow the most. Thank you.
Yes. First, we expect that the economy growth at similar pace in 2019 that in 2018. 2019 and 2018. We expected that 2018 the growth is going to be around 4%, and in 2019 we expect 3.7%, that is very similar. In terms of growth, our guidance is in similar levels that the previous year, between 8 and 10%, but probably with a different composition. During 2018, we have had a significant growth in wholesale banking, and we expect a slight difference in 2019, probably with higher levels of growth in consumer, credit cards, mid-market, and probably not as robust in wholesale banking.
Thank you. Again, as a quick reminder, we ask that you please ask one question at a time. Our next question comes from Philip Finch with UBS.
Thank you for the presentation. I've got two questions, but I'll ask one question at a time. The first question is regarding your costs, your operating expenses. So we saw this grow by around 11% year-on-year, which is significantly above inflation. Now, you've given us efficiency guidelines for 2019. So really what I'd like to ask is, what sort of cost growth should we assume for 2019? The same level that we saw in 2018? And what are the drivers for that? And I'll come back to my second question later. Thank you.
Okay. Probably it would be worthwhile to review the drivers of the cost increase during 2018. As we mentioned previously, around 50% of the increase was produced in BCP standalone. In the case of BCP standalone, we have probably one-third of the cost increase due to the transformation efforts. The transformation is investing heavily in people, advisory, IT products. Part is registered as new assets, and other are experiments that we charge in the P&L directly. Two-thirds of the increase in BCP standalone were in the traditional business, and in this we have two main drivers. One driver is due to the increased volumes and transactional levels that drive IT expenses, marketing, loyalty programs, and so on. And another important part is due to the variable compensation that was linked to commissions and incentives to pay to the sales forces. Through the year, the productivity of the sales forces increased, and especially in the last quarter, we fell well above targets, and this caused two different things. One is you have actually more volume than you expect, so the level of payments goes above the target level, and additionally, we improve in some key aspects, for example, customer satisfaction that triggers additional bonuses. Down the road, we expect to have a increase in sales efficiency, but probably we are going to recalibrate the payment in a shorter period of time, from quarterly to monthly, maintaining this campaign. We see that as a positive result. As a whole, at BCP standalone, we exceeded our budget, so we set aside more funds for profit sharing. Another important driver in the cost was in Pacifico. In Pacifico, we grew significantly in terms of sales in life insurance business, in the products and Caflex and similar products to that, and we paid significant commissions and funds. This explains probably 60% of the increase in Pacifico, and the remaining is due to an accounting change that moved mainly from instant recognition to accrued throughout the life of the policy. The rest of the increase was mainly in Mibanco, who is building capabilities also. For the next year, we expect that the efficiency ratio as a whole is going to maintain a similar level than 2018, because we are going to have overlapping capabilities, increase in the transformation of efforts in BCP, more expenses in Ibanco and Pacifico, and at the same time we are very prudent maintaining the distribution capabilities. Later on, probably we are going to reduce costs. Probably I could give you one example. For example, in the reduction of branches that Francesca mentioned, we reduced the number of branches from around 25, as she mentioned, but the cost capture was only the equivalent of one-third because we translate the selling and distribution people to other branches. We are going to monitor this very carefully, and we will, when we feel comfortable that we are not going to sacrifice $1 of sales to save 20 cents, of course, we are going to manage this cost accordingly.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ernesto Gabilondo with Bank of America.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for the opportunity. Two questions from my side. The first one is a follow-up in terms of expenses. So can you repeat the expenses growth for this year? And given your transformation process, should we expect OPEX growth to start going down after 2021? And my second question is, after incorporating your 2019 guidance, is it reasonable to expect net income to perform low to mid-teens growth? Thank you.
We have a target based on cost to income. What we expect down the road is that the income is going to grow faster than the cost, and as a result of that, we are going to improve efficiency.
Yes, just to add on this is Dr. Ferrari, just to add on Cesar's comment, as he mentioned before, at this time we're having sort of an overlap between the traditional distribution strategy with the new distribution strategy, which Francesca mentioned earlier on. So what we foresee going forward is that at some point in time, the expenses of the digital world are going to stay stable. However, the operating cost in the traditional way of distribution is going to decrease. So overall, the aspiration we have as a BCP, and I stress the word aspiration, is to have a cost to income in the mid-30s. However, we do see that it's achievable to be below 40 in three more years.
Thank you. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1. We also ask that you please ask only one question at a time. After each question has been addressed by our speakers, you will be allowed to ask as many follow-ups as needed. Again, please ask one question at a time. Our next question comes from Andre Soto with Sanders.
Hi, thank you. My question is related to Mibanco's performance. We saw a normalization in cost of risk this quarter, but ROE remained below historical levels. This is due to weak NII performance, increase in expenses, and higher tax burden. I would like to understand if these trends reflect a change at Mibanco's operating model, as you're probably prioritizing growth in less profitable segments and employing people on the collection stage of the process. In the end, I would like to get a sense of what this structural profitability that we can expect from Mibanco looking ahead. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. If you compare 2018 with 2017, the figures at Mibanco improved. It's a matter of the last quarter. Basically, at Mibanco, the portfolio quality deteriorated over the last, actually, two quarters. However, what we've seen in the new vintages, all of them are within risk appetite. Going forward, in 2019, going back to 2018 as compared to 2017, the cost to income in Mibanco has improved dramatically, and if you compare that cost to income to Mibanco's main competitors, it is significantly better than those of our competitors. Going forward, we do see a slight deterioration in cost to income because you have to bear in mind that the Mibanco distribution model, which we are, by the way, we're not changing it yet, is based on people, on hiring people and training people, and therefore the vintage of bringing in new people cost you a lot at the beginning. Since we expect to increase sales forces by 2019, you're going to be a short-term impact in this year.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Mullen with Scotiabank.
My first question is on the impairment charge that you mentioned at Credicorp Capital. We saw this subsidiary go from a gain to a large loss. If you can quantify the charge and what this was attributed to, and if we should see other charges like this in the future, if you're anticipating any others. Thank you.
Yes. The impairment was for 38 million soles. And as mentioned, we mentioned during the presentation, a key factor in this impairment was the increase in the discount rate and in a lesser extent, adjustment in growth expectations. We don't envision an additional charge-off. Actually, we are confident with the book value levels at this point.
Thank you. Again, as a quick reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1 now. Our next question comes from Carlos Gomez with HSBC.
Hello, good morning. I wonder if you could comment on the competitive landscape. In the past, you have mentioned how, in particular, in corporate, you were seeing increasing competition, but now you're expecting higher margins for next year. Should we understand that competition has lessened somewhat? And if not, which areas do you see under more pressure? Thank you.
Yeah, competition has been very harsh last year, especially in the corporate segment. That, at some point in time, brought margins very low. However, the last quarter, margins in that segment picked up. Having said that, I would say that we do see the corporate business not as a lending business, but an overall business where lending is the commodity side of the business. We may lose market share in that corporate in the lending side at some point in time. However, what we follow very tightly is our market share in terms of payments, savings, payrolls, and things like that. The fee income businesses where we still gain market share. So we, even though we see that maybe, as a matter of fact, today we're seeing again competition in the corporate banking segment in terms of net income margin, we see the business in an overall sense. If we go to the next level, to the mid-market, we've gained market share dramatically last year, and at the same time, we improved the NIM in that segment. So in the overall wholesale business, we basically stay stable in terms of market share, and at the same time, improving NIM.
This approach, I think, is very important because we have the lending business, the deposits and the transactional services, and the later are gaining relative importance over time and strengthen the relationships.
Thank you. Again, as a quick reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Our next question comes from Jason Mullen with Scotiabank.
Hi. I just wanted to understand better as a follow-up on the Credicorp Capital impairment. You mentioned the increase in discount rate and growth and potentially lower growth and lower growth projection. What was this? Was this a project? Were these projects that you were analyzing, or was this just what kind of assets were these, or what kind of investment was this that you had to take the charge on?
If I understood well, now we have two different things in that. One, the business that we bought. And we have goodwill in this business, so each year we measure the net present value with the current value. and we have an insignificant project to develop the wealth management business. The potential gains of this wealth management business has not been incorporated in the calculation that I mentioned previously. We see as a two different things for this regard.
Hi, Jason, this is Walter Bailey. Being very specific, what we have written down in the last quarter is related to the acquisition of IS Trust Chile, which has some remaining goodwill attached to the valuation, and we have completely eliminated any remaining goodwill of that acquisition. As César mentioned, the main reason for that was an increase in the discount rate of the Chilean assets. We do not have any further goodwill that can be impaired in Chile anymore, which was the assets that over the past couple of years have required a certain level of yearly review and impairment. So this is done and over with and related specifically to one transaction, the acquisition of an investment bank broker dealer in Chile.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alonso Aramaburu with BTG.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. I wanted to follow up on the expenses questions. If we look at your guidance of loan growth, 8 to 10%, with margins improving between 15 and 45 basis points and stable efficiency, it would seem that expenses will grow double digits in 2019. So I'm just wondering if that's the ballpark figure that you have of expenses growing this year.
The expenses, when we consider the NIM, we need also consider the other income, fee income, that grows slightly below the pace of the NIM. So the expenses are going to grow similarly to the combined effect of the NIM and the other income.
Thank you. Again, as a quick reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1 now. Our next question comes from Carlos Gomez with HSBC.
Yes, thank you again. And sorry to come back to expenses, but obviously it is the focus here. Could you explain to us if you have a particular budget? I mean, you have a certain amount that you are willing to spend in the transformation process. How long it's going to take? 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? And what are the key elements that take you from the current 44% cost-income ratio to the expected mid-30s? I mean, it's a big, big change. So what are the keys? Is it the reduction in branches? Is it doing things electronically? What brings us from here to there? Thank you.
Just to be very specific, the mid-30s aspirations is at BGP level, not at credit card level.
Yes.
For your info, the BGP level cost to income closed in 41.4 last year. You can do the math. We do have a plan on investing in digital. And the overall results are that in that plan can help us, should help us reduce in an important way the cost to income ratio. I don't know, Francesca, I don't know if you can share the specifics, but you can give them a flavor of how much we're spending on the digital transformation.
The way we look at it as a transformation expense is it's difficult to separate the pure transformation to the improving of the way we serve customers in a digital world. So the way we look at it, about a third of the investment we have is related to making our current business better. And that's investing in technology, in channels, et cetera. The other two-thirds is investing in disruptive technology, disruptive way to process, and so forth. We do have a budget. We set a target annually. We discuss with the rest of the bank the appetite that the bank wants to include in the transformation. And we also set these engines that we talked about in the conference relating to engines focused on achieving cost reduction or also new income sources. The channels, the distribution channels, the IT engine, the data engine are very much focused on reducing the cost to process and serve our customers.
Yes, and probably to add, we have set up a governance framework to classify the costs and investments in run, grow, and transform, and we have specific methodologies to approve projects and to set up expectations for each of these categories.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Diego Lucio with Wells Fargo.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to ask a question. Earlier in the presentation, you mentioned that you had adjusted your profit sharing because you exceeded revenue goals. I was wondering what the extent of that adjustment was and if you have an idea of what your cost-to-income ratio was before the adjustment. Thanks.
Yes. The specific comment was related to BCP standalone, and explains probably 5% of the yearly increase, but is significant in the fourth quarter in which the whole adjustment was made.
Thank you. Again, as a quick reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Our next question comes from Miguel Tolo, Gavia.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the opportunity. My question comes from the funding cost. We have seen, you said that there's going to be a pressure of margins because of competition and Mibanco. I want some guidance of funding cost by subsidiary for the next couple of years. And also, we have seen a reduction in the loan and deposit ratio on Mibanco for the quarter-over-quarter and year-over-year ratios. What's your guidance for the next year on this ratio? Thanks.
We don't provide specific guidance for these figures, but we can give you some comments. In general, we expect that the solid short-term rates are going to increase slightly at the end of the year, and we are improving our funding structure both in BCP and in Mibanco. In the case of Mibanco, they are working actively in creating distribution and transactional capabilities, so they are going to improve the mix probably at a higher rate pace than the previous years. As a result, they are probably going to improve the cost of funding, but there are significant pressures in terms of interest rates. It's a very competitive market.
Just to complement what Cesar just mentioned, at the Mibanco level, maybe the weakest strategic part of the business at Mibanco is their funding structure. And this comes from the previous Mibanco, because Mibanco, as most of the microfinance institutions, get the bulk of their funding through the local capital market or professional investors. So Mibanco is investing and developing a whole transactional value proposition for their clients, so that they can get funding from those clients. You have to bear in mind that Mibanco already has 2 million clients. So we do see an opportunity to get a very low cost funding going forward. But obviously, as in any retail business, it's a long-term strategy.
The good
results
have already been costed last year.
Yeah, but just to be specific, lower funding costs at Mibanco for last year was mainly because Mibanco launched very successful campaigns for time deposits. Going forward, what we're planning to do, and what we're doing actually, is to provide the right value proposition in order to get saving accounts and current account funds, which are even at lower cost.
Thank you. There are no additional questions at this time. I would like to now turn the conference back to Mr. Walter Bailey for closing remarks.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. So in 2018, the main characteristics were clearly an event of political volatility in the first half. It's not very often that we go through such level of political change without major disruptions in the economic side of the economy, fortunately. We've also suffered, maybe as a consequence of this political volatility, slow growth. Both of these events created a certain deterioration of the cost of risk, particularly due to the tail end of Lavallato or TCP, and some very specific issues at Mibanco which have already been addressed. The fundamentals during this last quarter have been very encouraging. The results, nevertheless, have been impacted by increase in operating expense, items that have been well explained already. We are not concerned, and it is very important to give the market the confidence that we continue to have a very strict discipline in cost control. After many years of a very successful efficiency program at BCP, we are probably going to launch and go into a second stage of that. Cost discipline is a necessary item going forward, and we have not lost and will not lose that very strict discipline that has proven to be very successful for us in the past couple of years. And we believe and are confident that we are very well directed towards continuing to improve the efficiency ratio, particularly at BCP. As Gianfranco explained, at Mibanco, on the other hand, we have decided to pursue further growth and expect to deteriorate somewhat our short-term efficiency ratio because of the expense of hiring and training sales force. We have already corrected the specific risk issues and again are ready to pursue growth at Mibanco. Overall, at Credicorp, we are confident that our short, medium, and long-term strategies are well-defined, well-executed, and have the appropriate governance to monitor developments, deviations, and timely adequations to market and technology development. We continue to see growth opportunities in the markets in which we operate through the continued existence of our unbanked segments of the population and growth in the economies in which we operate. And we are very confident that our different subsidiaries and initiatives are very well positioned to continue to capture the growth. We are optimistic regarding the future results of Credicorp, both in the short and medium term. With this, I really want to thank your continued presence in the conference call and look forward to meeting you one-on-one and as well as to being with you in the end of the results and showing us the results of the first quarter of this year. Thank you very much to finalize this conference.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's presentation. You may now disconnect.